including one section of this retreat session. I was trying to give a bird view of different approaches in spiritual life in general. The four yogas and also the underlying philosophy behind these yogas. Now, you know, in practical spiritual life, the most difficult thing to achieve and to practice, to experience is to develop what we call spiritual common sense. Mm-hmm. It is called viveka. In Sanskrit, it is known, goes by the name viveka. It's difficult to translate. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, from 55th to 72nd verse, where the Lord Krishna gives a graphic description, a list of the characteristics of a spiritually evolved person. He is not talking about the philosophy that a spiritually enlightened person believes in or tries to practice. Rather, he is trying to give a description of how he reacts, interacts with people living around, and how he responds to different situations around. So, in fact, the question that Arjuna puts is, Siddhapratni se kaam bhasa samadhistha se geshiva sthidati kim prabhasida kim asida vrajeda. I mean, how does a spiritually enlightened person whose prajna is sthida, means, literally it means a spiritual seeker who has got a perfect spiritual common sense. It's difficult to explain. To give an example, suppose you have a PhD in that area of psychology which deals with human interactions. That's particularly focusing on that area. And you know all about living in this world, behaving in this world, behaving in an acceptable, recognized manner with the people around. But such an eminent psychologist may himself become an eccentric in his actual behavior. He can write a PhD, he can give wonderful presentations, he can present a paper, he can treat, he can counsel patients. He can counsel husbands and wives who are facing problems in domestic life. He can do all this. But in his own personal life, it may not work because he has no control over his own thoughts. See, we can control how our feet and hands work, which direction we should walk, to the left or right, we can decide very easily. Whether you have to buy apple or orange, it is your choice. But what thought you are going to think next moment is not your choice. What emotion, what feelings, which actually eventually design and determine behavior and character, is not in our hands. So there is always an unknown, unpredictable, an inexplicable, an unknown factor about the human personality. How can we evolve a GPS system in our mental life? We can do that freely, but I shall have this thought now and after that next thought. Then you can do that. So the only way out, yesterday we mentioned, tena ditena ujjitha. How do we evolve a spiritual common sense? We have to connect the mind to something that is beyond mind. That goes beyond mind. At the mental level, you cannot control mind. If you want to control mind, you have to go beyond mind. If you want to teach textbooks meant for the master's class, then you should have at least a PhD. You should go beyond that. So, to be able to live a sensible, balanced life with a spiritual common sense is called sthira prajna in Sanskrit, or viveka. We need to link our mind to a higher transcendental idea. That's what the Ishavasi Upanishad talks about. The third line of the first verse, Ishavasi Midam Sarvam yaktinja jagatyam jagatyarum tiena tyaktena unchidha. Enjoy this world, live in this world, but with the spiritual commandments, which you can accomplish only by linking the mind to something that is beyond mind. Because when the mind is linked to Atman, then mind immediately becomes calm and quiet. So a mental peace, mental mind control is not possible at the mental level. It is possible only at the spiritual level. Now, karma yoga helps us to practice and evolve the spiritual common sense in our everyday life. As I said, we can never decide or predetermine what thought is going to emerge in our mind next moment. So we need not worry about controlling the mind or what thoughts are going to emerge in the mind. Link the mind to say a higher spiritual idea. Then mind will naturally evolve what we may call a filtering mechanism. Wrong associations can take us to the doors of hell. You may be the most educated, enlightened, responsible person. And you may be a very wonderfully gifted person, full of self-confidence. But still, you may be controlled by a wrong person who is far inferior to you in all areas, because something is lacking in you, in spite of all education, all good feeling, all noble intentions, all noble character. What is that? We are not able to lay out, to say no to wrong thoughts that may pollute our mind. So you find Mahapuranas, you find even many Homer's works are full of stories where great good men and women were trapped, were misled by people who are far inferior to them. So, this filtering mechanism is very important in spiritual life. Filtering mechanism is another name for viveka. So, once we develop this viveka, what happens, you know? You automatically evolve an aversion towards something that is unhealthy. You may listen to a person who is giving wrong ideas, who may mislead you, but you won't be affected by that. You know, you go to Trader Joe's, then you buy something, the shop will tell you, have a great day. You won't be overjoyed. Oh, this man, it is a statement. Have a great day. So that man is praying for me to have a wonderful day. So one Indian gentleman from an upcountry part of India, very backward part of India, was visiting San Francisco, was visiting maybe his grandson, that means he was 80 years old, and never traveled outside India. So he was telling me, very funny, you know, he was telling me, oh, I was walking in the street. Whenever I tried to cross the street, the vehicle stopped on both sides and won't move till I cross the street. Because in India, they will move in all directions. You should run for your life. To save your life. The vehicle drivers won't care for you. But here they stand, disciplined, and you cross the street, then only they will start moving. So how wonderfully good people. They are so much concerned for that. Then I said, he's not concerned. They are concerned about losing money. They may get a ticket. They are concerned about the money, not about life. So also we walk in the street. People will ask you, how are you today? Now, when you first hear this, but yesterday was perfect. I was miserable. Today, how are you better? Actually, suppose you stop and start answering. That man must have already walked 50 feet. So these are all just very, very formal, almost meaningless, mechanical reactions. Like that, when we have to interact with people with wrong ideas, poisonous ideas, which may pollute the mind, what we can do? Our mind can evolve a filtering mechanism. That's the term used by Swami Yudhishthira, who worked in Philadelphia in this country and also in Germany before the Second World War. He gave a series of lectures. So he, in answer to a question in Germany, he gave the answer. See, you cannot count, I'm going to think 50 good thoughts today. But instead of that, you try to start thinking of one noble thought, then all other thoughts will be somehow be influenced by one noble thought. So that helps us to develop what? This is my system, a spiritual common sense. In Sanskrit, the great Shankaracharya was the first great teacher who said, Nitya Anitya Vastu Viveka. Philosophically and spiritually means you have a discerning mind. What is real? What is the real thing, so to speak? And what is false? What is unreal? You naturally evolve a reflex action at the mental level to avoid the wrong, the unreal, and to cling to, to stick to the real. Without this, spiritual life is not possible. Now, and this is possible through two psychological mechanisms. One, linking our mind to a higher level. Second, practicing non-attachment. The latter is the natural effect of the former. When we link ourselves to a transcendental idea, when we link mind to Atman, then mind itself gets connected to Atman. I said this at the first session. I give the analogy of a stream or a stream of water. There are many rivers and streams which have got water only for 2-3 months of the year. The rest of the year may be dry or may be full of bacteria, dirt and filth. No water. But suppose you link that stream to this lake Tahoe by cutting a canal or to the ocean, then that river becomes a perennial source of water. Like that, once we link our mind to this transcendental spiritual idea, either have a high goal, noble ideal in mind, at least keep in the reason, you may feel, well, I am not able to work accordingly. No problem. Keep somewhere in the mental horizon. If not today or tomorrow, maybe after some time, we will be able to orient and regulate all our thoughts. Remember, thoughts in that direction. And once thoughts can be directed in that direction, Viveka is natural. Otherwise, it is impossible for us to lead a spiritual life because we won't know whom to listen to. Even the holiest of places, you find wrong elements. Even in the best of company, you find people who give you wrong ideas. Mahabharata is full of such stories. A great lady, Kaikeyi, was the embodiment of love and affection for Rama, became a terrible woman when she was influenced by a wrong person. She was a great noble lady, the embodiment of love and affection for Rama. She loved Rama more than Rama's own mother, Kaikeyi. So you find many such instances. The noblest, the most well-meaning spiritual seekers losing their track very often by being trapped by wrong thoughts, wrong associations, wrong ideas. That's why there is a medicine prescribed in the Bhagavad Purana which helps us to evolve the spiritual common sense. The verse is, it comes in the 11th skandha, where not Krishna, one of these nine seeds called Antariksha. There's a dialogue between a great emperor, Nimi, and nine sages. Kabir Khavir Andariksha Prabhupada Pipalayana Avi Kotroda Samasa Samasa Karabhaja. Anyway, if you want, I have given a number of talks on this very subject. You can find YouTube, Nimi Navayogi Samvada Bhagavata. Anyway, now coming to the focal point which I'm going to focus on is this. There is one verse. Ishare tadadhineshu balisheshu disutsucha prema maitri kripa upeksha yakkarodi samadhyam. How should we all behave in this world when we have interact with people of various types? Suppose we are all trying to lead a spiritual life, discipline our life, want to do good things, want to do noble things, want to meditate, want to evolve a spiritual common sense. Doing good for others and thereby attaining inner peace. But there's a problem. Our spiritual aspirations create one world. And the external world is totally different. in workplace, in factories, when this broad world, when we'll be walking the streets, we may have to associate with people. We cannot just run away from them, we cannot fight them, and you cannot befriend them beyond the limit. That's also dangerous. So there is a method given here. Four approaches in our interaction with the external world. One, Ishwar, devotion to God. Let us say in a general way, a great spiritual aspiration. That's first. Then what about those who are fellow spiritual seekers? So, devotees, Vedantins, assembling in a retreat center, or when we are conducting prayer. So, wonderful devotees. In fact, if fellow retreats and fellow spiritual seekers interact among themselves, there are two results produced. One, the whole atmosphere is charged with the spiritual vibration. That's why when we go to a temple or a church, we feel inner peace, because that place is full of holy, healthy vibrations. When we go there, and if our mind is tuned to that, those holy vibrations will enter our system and will have an uplifting effect in our mind. So, this is one thing. So, when we interact with fellow spiritual seekers, we should be friendly. Tadadhineshu means maitri, means towards in our interaction, in our approach towards people who are spiritual seekers, like any of us. We must be friendly. So, devotion to God and a feeling of friendliness towards fellow spiritual seekers. Then what about those who don't know anything about spiritual life? You have friends, very good people, noble people, but they may not have any chance to read a book on Vedanta, listen to higher spiritual ideas, may not get a chance, but they are certainly good people, noble people. You should have the Sanskrit word is sympathy. Kripa means you should have a sympathetic understanding. We can talk about spiritual things. And they also will be happy because they are good people. They are not negative. So they will be happy if you talk to them. If you discuss spiritual ideas, which they understand will be helpful to them, which may help them in their family life, which may help them in their interaction with different members of society and family, then they will be very grateful to you. So we should be sympathetic towards them. We should try to discuss. Then there is a fourth class. So, Ishwari Tadadhineshu Bhadisheshu Dushashuja, the fourth category. The moment you talk to them, finished. A poisonous seed is planted in your heart. Wrong association, wrong ideas. What to do? You cannot fight them. They may be your colleagues. They may be your boss, maybe. So, if you fight them, you may lose your job. So, it may create problems in the workplace. So, what you should do? We must not fight with them. Because quarreling and fighting is also an interaction that could link you with them, to them. At the same time, you cannot be friendly with them. Somebody may ask the question, everything is Atman, then why? What's the problem? So, we have to remember the story in Sri Ramakrishna's Gospel. The elephant was running, chasing you, and a man sitting on the top of the elephant was shouting, "Please, it's a mad elephant, dangerous, keep away." But you didn't listen to him. You only remember what the teacher told you, elephant also is an embodiment of God. So let us stand astray. And the elephant took the man, crushed him, and he was injured but badly hurt. So the point is, without a spiritual common sense, we may not know where to stand, how to react in this world. So, by dealing with the fourth category of people, whose association may plant seeds of skepticism and doubt, that's the most visible signs of whether a person is a healthy association or unhealthy association. If interaction with certain people make you feel spiritually more confident, gives you inner peace, then you should associate with them. On the other hand, if some association may give you skepticism, skepticism is a very dangerous thing, worse than atheism, worse than non-belief. Because skepticism keeps you revolving around a wheel in a very helpless manner. See, Swami Vivekananda was an agnostic, but a very sincere agnostic. So he became a great saint. An agnostic can become a saint. Even an atheist can become a saint. If you listen to the talks and lectures of persons like Richard Dawkins, even there is a noble man there, a humanist, a person with a good heart. Maybe he may not accept God or anything. Maybe he can become a saint. But a skeptic can never become a saint. Because a skeptic is fully aware of his own skeptical nature. He's going to come out of it. So the point is, so this verse says, keep a long distance from them. Upeksha, that's a Sanskrit term used. So Swami Vivekananda, in one of his lectures, very interestingly, in the same sentence, he repeats indifference, indifference, indifference in Bhakti Yoga lectures. He is focusing on how we must interact with people whose association may take us away from spiritual path or may fill our mind with skepticism and doubt and may create confusion in the long run. So Vivekananda uses this word three times, the same sentence. Indifference, indifference, indifference. That's what Swami Vivekananda says. Having said this, I'm going to narrate before you a story, which in a way illustrates the importance of developing a spiritual common sense. Very famous episode. It's again a story of a great emperor king. His name was Bharata. He was a very great king, and he said that India got the name Bharata Varsha, the ancient name of India. If you find ancient books, Bharata, it got because India was at that time the huge subcontinent, all the way from Azerbaijan to Sri Lanka, all the way from Afghanistan to Burma, maybe around 4000 BC, 4 millennium, was ruled by, maybe earlier, by this Bharata king. Bharata, Emperor Bharata. So India got the name Bharata Varsha because according to one school of thought, different schools of thought in this matter. Okay. Now, so he was a great king and emperor, and he became old. Then he wanted to live the rest of his life in contemplation. So he left the palace, renounced everything, and he dressed himself as a mendicant with a begging bowl. You have seen Swami Vivekananda's picture as a parivraja, as a wandering monk with a stick. Like that, this great emperor, Bharata, also left his kingdom, his comforts, his palace, and went to a forest. He built a small thatched hut near the bank of a river and spent several years absorbing meditation. Yeah, he was already quite old. Then something happened. Remember, he was a great emperor who renounced everything to live the rest of his lifetime in contemplation and meditation. Then it so happened that one day, as he was sitting after his long meditation in the morning, early morning, he was sitting on the bank of the river. Then he found a female deer, which is pregnant, was being chased by a lion. The deer was running for its life. And then, it was a small stream, mind you, not a long, big river. So the deer tried to crawl, jump over the river. And in its tremendous effort, just a female deer, which is pregnant, it died. But the little baby deer fell in the water. So, and the lion, of course, the lion could, seeing the emperor there, the lion went away. So the mother deer died. The little baby flooding the water. Now what should the king do? Naturally, he plunged in the river, saved the little baby deer. And in course of time, this little deer grew up in his hermitage. It won't go away. So the king, being a very compassionate person, as he was a great noble king, he poured all his affection on this little baby deer. And it also had a great sense of loyalty and love and affection for his master, the king. But something else happened. The king stopped meditation. The early morning, instead of doing his meditation or reading scriptures, taking the holy name of God, he will be looking for the little baby deer. So he will collect a lot of grass and dew. And he will be careful that little baby deer has to be protected from wild animals. So he was a very noble man, a compassionate person. Now, if he had become a great Jivan Mukta, I mean a highly liberated soul, like a Buddha, this would have been all right. If you were a Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, Shankaracharya, a Buddha, there would be no problem. But he was a great advanced spiritual seeker who had not reached his goal. A quite sincere advanced seeker. So what happened, you know, the emperor who had children in his palace, who left them behind, poured all his love and affection on the little baby deer. So he became so attached to that baby deer. So eventually he died, the old man. While dying, he was not thinking of God as he would have done. Remember, I quoted this verse day for yesterday. And when Shuka asked Parikshit the question, Ada Prachami Sam Siddhim Yoginam Paramam Guru Purusha Sevayat Karyam Vayamana Se Sarvata. When the king who was about to die put a question to the sage, what should a dying man focus on, contemplate on, how should he go about doing his duty? The answer that the sage gave to this king in the previous session that I narrated day for yesterday was this. And then Narayana Smriti, while dying, when you breathe your last, you should have God's form in your heart. The holy name of God in your lips, and the holy memory of holy associations flashing in your mind. That's the final goal of human existence. To leave this world with a smile. Smile, not out of any kind of satisfaction or enjoyment. Smile of serenity. Smile of inner contentment. That is the supreme goal of human existence. That will show how you have lived. So, this emperor had completely forgotten all about this. So when he was dying, he was still looking for the little baby deer. And he was worried, after my death, some wild animals will come and kill and eat it. So who is going to protect this little animal, which I looked after so well all these years? And then he died. So what happened? He was born as a deer. The next life. So remember, a king who left his palace, his comforts, everything, and went to a forest, spent all his years in contemplation, happened to be born as a deer because of his attachment to the deer, the animal. If he had shown his compassion without breaking the link to the higher transcendental ideal, spiritual ideal, to God, then he would not be born as a deer. What happened, you know? He broke that link, the transcendental link, and he thought it was his duty to look after this animal. He didn't have any other duty. Because of this problem, it's called attachment. So attachment sometimes can be a chain made of gold. So even if you are bound and chained by a golden chain, you cannot break it. It makes no difference whether we are bound by a golden chain or a iron chain. It's still a chain, a bondage. The difference is, when we are spiritual seekers, at one stage, we'll be able to throw the flashlight into our own inner life. That's the main difference between a spiritual seeker and others. When we have a spiritual aspiration, even if we fall by the wayside, even if we have some deviation, as it happened in the case of this king, what happens, you know, the tremendous spiritual practices that he had observed, performed in his life, will not go in waste. So when he was born as a deer, what happened? It still remembered, in my previous life, I was an emperor. I was a great devotee of God. I have renounced everything. I went to a forest hermitage. I meditated. I thought of God. But unfortunately, due to an unfortunate attachment to a little baby deer, I had to be born as a deer. The deer did not forget his past. So if people remember, you know, sometimes you go to Vedanta society, sometimes you go to any holy place, if you feel, well, I've been here earlier. This idea seems to be familiar to me. Or rather, I feel at home. You feel at home with certain ideas, certain thought currents. It could happen when you read a book, when you go to San Francisco University Library, you read a book, it could happen. But frequently what happens, you know, because of thick veil of ignorance of Maya, it remains momentary. If you can prolong that association, then life will be transformed. Look at Sri Ramakrishna and his disciple, Yam. Yam was a man who was born in a family of large family, economically not so well advanced. One day at midnight, he left his home, apparently to commit suicide. His own wife became concerned. And she also accompanied him, wandered about the streets of Calcutta. Eventually, he reached the home of his nephew. Please remember, I am talking about the very wonderful, spiritually very elevating life of Sri Ramakrishna's chronicler, Yam Mahendranath Gupta, who wrote the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, the diary, translated in Bengali and English. And eventually, he landed in his nephew's home. Next day, his nephew took him around and they reached Dakshineswar temple where Sri Ramakrishna was teaching his disciples in the evening. And as Yam looked into the room, suddenly he thought, well, here is a holy man. When I listen to him, I feel I am transported to an ancient age where Shuka, the great teacher of Bhagavata, is expounding the highest spiritual philosophy. Like there are so many memories, so many associations flash in his mind. Suddenly he thought of Chaitanya. Suddenly he thought of the great Vedic sages. He had just one glance at Sri Ramakrishna. That was only beginning. And then he felt, well, something seems to bring me back to this place, mentally. And that was only beginning of a new chapter in his life. And he became a great disciple of Sri Ramakrishna. Thanks to whom, today we have this universal spiritual classic known as the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. So when he just heard Sri Ramakrishna's words and he listened to him for a few minutes, had a peep into Sri Ramakrishna's little room where he was talking to his disciples, that is the beginning of a new life for him. So from suicide thoughts, it became the beginning of a new spiritual life for him. You can imagine. Why? Because there were accumulated memories and associations already which enriched his mind. So when he looked into Sri Ramakrishna's room, listened to Sri Ramakrishna, he connected. And then, you know, it was the beginning of a new way of life for him. Like that, the deer did not forget his past. So it straight away went to a hermitage, a holy hermitage of a saint, and lived there. He did not move along with other deers, other animals in the forest. He just remained there, eating whatever little grass he could get from that tiny hermitage, without associating with any other wild animals, and he died. When he died, he was reborn again as a great saint. So an emperor who became a great devotee was born as a deer. The deer was reborn as a great saint. So you can imagine the accumulated spiritual treasure will accompany you with a checkbook, spiritual capital. When you reborn again, you continue your journey. But to be able to continue this spiritual journey, we need this wonderful spiritual instrumental mechanism. It's called filtering mechanism, called Viveka. Otherwise, we are traveling, we'll be simply swept away in another direction. Through the doors of the devil. I don't believe, but it is the language that we use. So, that is an important point to remember. All yogas essentially help us to evolve the spiritual inner mechanism. So mind itself, as Sri Ramakrishna says in the gospel, becomes a guide, a philosopher, and a teacher. And when we practice this spiritual sadhana, you find Yama and Yama automatically follows. If you read Patanjali Yoga Sutra class that we are discussing now every Friday, not in San Francisco, Yama and Niyama constitute the most fundamental spiritual disciplines, mental disciplines, moral disciplines, ethical disciplines. Ahimsa, Satya, Asteya, Brahmacharya, Parigraha, Saujya, Sandosha, Tapaswa, Adhyaya, Isvara, Panidhana. So non-violence, non-stealing, truthfulness, freedom from greed, freedom from possession, inner contentment, inner purity, outer purity, and many other related qualities. The point is, once we start practicing karma yoga, you need not worry about developing these qualities one after another. They automatically follow you. That's an interesting point, remember. You know, Patanjali himself makes it clear. Ishara Pranidhana Dva, this is in the one of the sutras. There are 195 sutras in the Patanjali Yoga Sutra, divided into four chapters, which we are discussing in San Francisco every Friday from 7:30 to 8:30. So now the point is, Patanjali himself says, if you link your life, your mind to this higher transcendental spiritual ideal, then all other disciplines automatically become yours. You need not follow one, two, three like that. It's not possible in empirical life. If you want to read the university, you reach the university, you have to begin with kindergarten. But in spiritual life, if we can somehow link our mind to this higher spiritual ideal, then all the characteristics of a spiritually evolved person automatically become ours. And then we don't have to worry about what thoughts we are going to think, because our thoughts will themselves fall in place. They will evolve an inner discipline, an inner regulating pattern. And then this Viveka will be ours. If you do not try to evolve this inner spiritual common sense, you know what happens? A lot of time, energy will be wasted. A lot of time, frustration. And again coming back. All these will. This again is illustrated with the help of an analogy from Chandogya Upanishad in the 6th chapter, which Sri Ramakrishna also uses. It's a little difference. Suppose a bird that is sitting on the mast of a ship tries to leave the ship behind and tries to fly around the vast expanse of sky. The ship is in the middle of the ocean, not near the bank, not near the land, right in the middle of the ocean, thousands of miles away from anywhere. And this bird is tied to the ship by a thread, as in the Upanishad, or let us say the bird is sitting on the top deck, maybe the deck of the ship. Suppose the bird suddenly deludes himself into thinking, well, I want to get freedom from the ship. it will only lead it to its death. So, if you go about everywhere without this connecting link, without linking our mind to the spiritual idea, then a lot of time and effort will be wasted. Now, in this context, there is an interesting verse which comes in one of our scriptures, in Gita itself. It says, Arjuna asks one question to Krishna. The question is very simple. Atha kena prayuktoyam pavam charadi purushaka anichinnavi varshneya vela diva niyojita. This is a verse which literally means, he's asking this question. If we don't really want to do anything wrong, we want to lead a spiritual life, still our mind somehow, for some reason or other, goes in the opposite direction. This frequently happens. Often we find there's a conflict between our mind and intellect. When we read a book, when we listen to a lecture, we form a strong conviction and determination to follow one way of life, spiritual way of life. Or we want to do something noble. Either we want to stop doing something which is not desirable, or we want to start doing something which is noble or desirable. But when we really try to practice this decision, implement this decision, then suddenly we find we are not able to do that. There is a kind of helplessness at the mental level. Mind apparently creates an invisible mental block. So you can, this frequently happen in our life. A great conflict between a strong, noble spiritual aspirations, sincerity, this is almost called real noble aspiration, on the one hand, and its opposite, a total helplessness when we really try to practice it. Now, no psychologist can really solve this problem, because it goes beyond psychology. Because it has not anything to do with the mind. It has something to do with our inner personality, which is constituted by the memories and impressions of actions and behavior that we may have gone through in previous life. So you cannot solve the problem by applying psychological principles of counseling. Hypnotist can bring you only up to memory formation stages. There are many things in our life that cannot be apparently linked to our earlier memories or experiences in childhood or other times. So how to solve this problem? So Vedanta says, an attempt to practice Karma Yoga. Because Karma Yoga has got one uniqueness. It is simple. It is simple and it is apparently less tedious. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to leave anything behind. Only along with what we do, we must try to practice a spiritual idea. Karma should be linked to yoga idea. So once we try to do that, then what happens? You know, many of this waste of time, energy, and these distractions can be avoided. And another important point, yesterday and day first day I mentioned, one important sign that reveals, that shows that we are on the right track, is, as I mentioned yesterday, the feeling that we have done something that we ought to have done. The feeling, in fact, it is its own reward. It is not action alone. Rather, it is something that comes after action. At the time of doing, we may not feel this. But after doing something, when we look back, even if our action has cost us money and many other things, it has not brought us anything by way of material comforts or rewards, still, the feeling that we have done something which we ought to have done. To develop this feeling of inner contentment. Scriptures, both Hindu scriptures and other Christian scriptures, give one important method, one solution, that is combination of human effort and God's intervention. These two aspects. Combination of human effort and God's intervention. In the Vedantic tradition, God's intervention is related to surrender to the will of God, which is technically called prapatti in Vaishnava tradition or Saranagati. It means, actually it consists of six important characteristics. This also one way of linking our mind and life to a transcendental spiritual ideal. The spiritual ideal may be Vedantic ideal of unity, spiritual unity of creation, or it could be the devotional idea that God is the embodiment of kindness, mercy, and so on. So the first characteristic is this. We must always have a positive, healthy feeling and a sense of identification with a spiritual idea or God. Like Anugulya Sankalpa is called. Anugulya means something positive, conducive to spiritual life. We must have an instinctive tendency to go for ideas which are helpful and conducive to spiritual life. This is called Anugulya Sankalpa. Sankalpa means thoughts, determination, ideas, our approach, all this. All this should be conducive to spiritual life. This is something we must try to reach. The beginning, it may not be possible. The beginning, sometimes, along with negative ideas, we must also evolve positive ideas. Because the mental system has got something interesting about it. Our personality is like a bank. It is full of tendencies, memories and impressions, good and bad. Sometimes, you know, when we try to do something noble, we feel a great enthusiasm. That's because the positive memories and tendencies, samskaras, are helpful. That means there is a majority domination of positive samskaras, healthy memories, healthy impressions from positive spiritual practices in previous life. If you face so many conflicts, too many conflicts, that's because there is a domination of negative samskaras. Very often multiple personalities is being explained in the light of the conflict of samskaras and previous life and karma theory and so on by some mainstream psychologists. Anyway, confining to spiritual scriptures. So the first attempt is to improve and increase positive samskaras. Then avoid negative samskaras. Pratikulyasya vartana means completely avoiding any action or any thought current, any idea that may create a negative or unhealthy or maybe unhelpful samskaras or tendencies. Now what is tendency samskara? I shall try to explain. This has to be explained. When we do something, a result is produced. But also that action may produce either a tendency to repeat that action or to avoid that action. When the action produces pleasant results that we want, that we like, then we may have a tendency to repeat it. When they produce wrong, opposite results, then we may have a tendency to avoid it. But anyway, this tendency becomes a samskara, an inner potency. It becomes a character, it becomes an attitude. So many of our attitudes are rooted in actions that we may have done in previous life. Some of them are very good, some of them may not be very good. When those which are very good are majority, so to speak, then we have a great enthusiasm. And we start enjoying doing good things. When there is a predominance of negative samskaras, then we face more and more stumbling blocks and mental blocks. So what to do? Increasing positive samskaras, so that obstacles will be less and less, they will decrease. So, anubhulyasiva sankalpa pradibhulyasiva. Rakshasiddhi vishwasa. That you find in all mystical traditions and devotional traditions. God is the protector. God will protect me, this idea. In fact, this idea, when it becomes sincere, then it becomes a spiritual help. In fact, Sri Ramakrishna uses the word vyakulata, means, suppose I mentioned this earlier. Now it is, say, 11 o'clock. We have no doubt about it. Our belief in the reality of God may not have the same level of reality with which we believe the fact it is 11 o'clock now. That belief in God, may be called different from the belief that it is 11 o'clock. It is an attempt to believe. When the belief becomes really belief, Sri Ramakrishna is called Yagulata. That belief will immediately induce us into appropriate action, spiritual practices. So, let's just see this. Goptukta Varanandata means looking upon God as protect. And then dedicating all our actions to God and leaving the whole responsibility to God. If we can do that, suddenly you find our life changes. Then this inner viveka, this filtering mechanism develops. Very often, you know, when we listen to lectures and after some time when we try to remember, suddenly we find there is a conflict between what we heard and the reality of life situations. This contrast sometimes is very difficult to solve, to get around. Now, once our faith becomes sincere, then along with that faith, we also will evolve this inner spiritual common sense. It's called viveka. Once this is developed, then spiritual life becomes simple. So, there is one very important verse which I want to refer to by trying to develop this inner spiritual common sense. Gita gives one clue, and after this we'll conclude for want of time. How do we react to external situations, experiences, and stimuli that come from outside? Gita says, Vishendriya samyoga yata dagri amurdopama pariname visamivata sutam jajasam sutam. Different types of our reactions to external experiences. Sometimes we enjoy certain things which are externally at the surface wonderful, but we know that eventually that may change. There are many things which are pleasant on the surface, shorter term. But the long term, it could be harmful. So the ability to understand this reality, this discerning mind is an important element of viveka. So those who are advanced in spiritual life will automatically evolve this filtering mechanism, and they will look for those things which are not necessarily pleasant on the surface. This one is called two words in Sanskrit. One is, one is called pathyam. Pathyam, that is called hitam. You know. There are a few things that we like, but not good for us. And there are a few things that are good for us, but because of our lack of maturity or lack of vivega, we may like. Say, diabetic patient, who wants to eat plenty of sweets. This is a kind of ordinary example. So, what is good for us, for our health in the long run? That is called hita or patya. And what we like, though it may be poison for us, is called priya. So, one important characteristic of spiritual common sense is you'll be able to focus on and choose what is patya and what is hita. I should try to explain, you know. You see, if you go to these Ayurvedic physicians, they may prescribe, if you have diabetes, they may prescribe you should eat this bitter melon. Yeah, like that. It's supposed to be good. But certainly not very pleasant to eat. So, that is patya is called. It is, the doctor has our welfare, our health in mind when he says you should eat this. And so it is hita and patya. It is good for us in the long run. Because the doctor wants us to live a few more extra years. But another person may prescribe something which we like. So if somebody tells you what you want to hear, don't take it very seriously. But if somebody tells you what you may not really like to hear, but eventually you may realize that's the very thing that you needed to hear, that is called hita. One important sign of a spiritual seeker who develops this inner filtering mechanism, this inner spiritual discerning mind, is he'll be able to recognize what is good for us, that is patya hita, what is appropriate for us. And he'll look for it. And he will not be trapped by what is priya. Priya means, as I remember, to give an example for those who are familiar with this, not familiar with this verse now. Rasagula, or what you call Indian sweets, which are certainly not the right thing to eat if you are a diabetic patient. Not the best thing to go for. That is priya. And only your worst enemy will recommend it for you. So you may like it if you don't have viveka, if you don't have a discerning mind maturity. You may like it. It is not the right thing for you. But another doctor who may want you to live a few more years may say you should not eat anything very sweet. You should eat some other things. It may be bitter, but it may help you to recover your health. That is hita and patya. Patya is what is recommended by a physician. Hita is the same thing because it is good for us in the long run. Priya is something which may be good for us, but in most cases, not good for us. So, the first visible sign that we are on the right track in spiritual life is we won't be trapped by what is superficially pleasant or happy or acceptable or desirable. Rather, we will have the discerning mind, the maturity, the spiritual maturity, to look for something that may not be pleasant externally, but will be useful and healthy and helpful for us in our spiritual life in the long run. So now we will have interaction. I think we have about half an hour. So
one question. Viveka, here you define Viveka as a spiritual discernment, right? And also I heard that Viveka is a wisdom.
That's true. Viveka, here what it means is that it helps us to evolve an attitude, a whole approach to life and life situations and also interactions. Not only in our attitude and behavior patterns with people, but also even in a thing like food even. I'm just giving a simple gross example, illustration. So, it's called spiritual maturity. So once we have it, then we won't be deluded, we won't be affected by wrong association or wrong ideas or wrong influences. Because we will have an inner filtering mechanism that will filter out all undesirable, unhealthy thought currents and influences. And will help us to stick to healthy and spiritually uplifting experiences. So you find in the Sri Ramakrishna's Gospel, he talks about certain disciples of his. The ability to discern, and he gives the example of Homa bird, Soma bird. Incidentally, it is mentioned in the Zend Avesta, but we didn't really get any reference in the Rigveda Samhita. Because Sri Ramakrishna, his Zend Avesta is mostly taken from some extinct portions of Rigveda Samhita, I got it for scholars. Anyway, it's a Zoroastrian classic spiritual book. So the point is, this bird, it starts flying, the mother lays eggs tens of thousands of feet away. And as the egg falls down, quickly, it hatches. And then, but when the little one opens eyes, he suddenly realizes he's going to hit the ground and perish. So immediately it starts flying forward, upward. So like that, once we are a spiritual seeker, what happens, we will develop a second personality. One personality is our normal self. Then, a very subtle inner personality is formed. That is a filter mechanism. And that personality will help us see this is not correct. You may not realize on the spot, after some days, after some hours, when we look back, but what that fellow was telling certainly is something wrong in that. Or the other way, what he was telling, there is something very sensible about it. What about this? How does this come? The first personality is the one who listens. Apparently. The second personality begins to function after some time. So a spiritual seeker will have a flashlight with him or with her, and he will be able to turn the flashlight into his own inner chamber, and he will be able to discover where we stand. So a kind of inner correcting mechanism is formed. That's the first thing that happens when we start praying. When we take a deep-rooted intellectual interest in scriptures, at the intellectual level, you discuss for 1,000 years on some philosophical topics, instead of praying once sincerely. Praying once sincerely with all vyakulata, Sri Ramakrishna calls it, like drinking a glass of milk. But discussing dry philosophy in a very superficial way is like eating a truckload of grass. A truckload of grass may give you some vitamin and protein, but you have to eat one whole truckload of it. Dry philosophy, intellectual interest, pastime, and all that. But sincere prayer is like drinking one glass of milk. Both may produce this, may give you the same amount of protein. But the other thing, you have to you destroy your vocal, your teeth, you have to go to dentist and all these problems. The other one, it is easy to digest, it takes less time at all, it is more direct. So anyway, whatever it is, when we try to do prayer or when we try to meditate sincerely, even when we try to sincerely believe in something, the sincere belief. Now, sincerity is not the right word to use. It's not an equivalent to the word that Sri Ramakrishna uses, vyakulata. Integrity, sincerity, 100% faith, all we have to put together, then only it becomes equal to what? Vyakulata word. So with that sense of perfect integrity, if you believe, then also this inner mechanism is formed. It's like a flashlight. You may commit a mistake, but after some time, the second personality, the spiritual personality, the filtering mechanism begins to operate. And you tell you, well, it is not right. And then you get a promotion, you get a quantum leap in your spiritual life. If you don't do any spiritual practice, you know what happens, you know, there is no flashlight. The inner chamber remains dark for ages. So, that's called Viveka. So, you find this in varying degrees in all spiritual circles. To give a classic example, you know, in a different language, it is given an anthropomorphic interpretation in the mystical literature of Christianism, the centuries of Babylon. Suddenly, he says, she looks back, oh, now the devil is tempting me, it's a problem. So that way, she's able to do that because she has this filtering mechanism. Of course, she interprets it in the light of the tradition of the received Christian mystical language, the vocabulary, the terminology used may be different, but at the spiritual level, the experience is the same. I mean, the second personality that you evolve when you start your spiritual life, that takes care of you. The first one remains there. The first one is a legacy of previous samskaras, negative samskaras, unhealthy samskaras. The second one is a legacy of our continuing spiritual practice and also the result of the good samskara that we accumulated previously.
Swami, does the second personality take over the first personality?
As we intensify spiritual practice, the second one completely vanishes and disappears when we reach the goal. I mean, when our faith becomes real, then the second one completely. At that stage, you won't be able to withstand the influence of negative samskaras.
So, first one disappears.
Yeah.
Second one.
The first one, actually, you understand that's not a real thing. That is as good as non-existent. That's what you find at the very beginning of spiritual life. You find. Suppose you ask children who, well, you should study well, you should go to church or temple or whatever. Children may not accept it. Once they do a few times, then you tell them go there every go to temple or church every day. They may not go every day; they may go once a week. But then their second personality also develops. I'm just giving an example. In spiritual life, this is what happens.
Since you've been addressing conscious thought, but we spend so much time of our day sleeping. More or less.
Yeah.
But I wonder if you could talk about, it seems very applicable about waking up in the middle of the night like I did last night, and I had, my thought was just sort of, sort of mindless, and I thought, I just started thinking something, a spiritual thought, and it helped me to get back to sleep, and even though I didn't sleep many hours, I felt rested in the morning.
Yeah. Yes. Our consciousness is normally analyzed as three layers, so to speak. The waking state, the deep sleep state, and in between the dream state. In waking state, we experience things at the gross level. The mind and senses of perception and senses of action are involved in waking state experiences. So I see this object. Because my eyes help me and also my mind help me. My eyes and mind coming together and focusing and visual object is called seeing. So also hearing, my sense of hearing and mind. Now in dream what happens is, in dream, in most cases, we relive, re-experience what we have already experienced in waking state. But there is one difference. In dream, we experience at the subtle level. In waking state, we experience at the gross level. That's why dream and memories are the same thing, really. Suppose you look at the Lake Tahoe and close your eyes, still you continue seeing the Lake Tahoe. You listen to your music this morning, tomorrow you continue listening. But tomorrow you listen to the music at the mental level, subtle level. The sound waves are not falling to ears, but you can hear it. That's where you are able to repeat the same song. So dream and memories are identical to Shankaracharya analyzes the Indian Mandukya Upanishad and Karika, Gaudapada's Karika. And in deep sleep, what happens, you know, our mechanism, our instrument for experiencing what we experience in waking state gets merged in Vedanta called it Moola Vidya, means it completely becomes, it loses its ability to function, so to speak. That's all we can say in English. So, but at the same time, in deep sleep, you feel a complete restfulness. Restfulness you cannot really experience unless there is awareness. So that awareness is unaffected by the diversity of experiences and conflicts that you experience in waking state at the gross level and in dream state at the subtle level. So you feel restfulness, you know the reason, because there is only you. If there is anything else, anything object, anything in the form of object, you won't feel restfulness. When we don't see anything, when we experience everything in our own self, self-absorption, then only we feel restfulness. That's why there are only two states in which human beings can experience complete restfulness. One is samadhi, where he experiences this restfulness with perfect awareness. And deep sleep, it's called sushupti, you experience the same restfulness, but you are not aware of it. So restfulness plus awareness is samadhi. Restfulness minus awareness is deep sleep. But this restfulness happens because there is no duality. In deep sleep, there is no duality, not because duality does not exist, but because you do not experience it. Because your tools for experiencing duality are not functioning in deep sleep. You don't transcend duality in deep sleep. You are not able to experience it. You are not aware of it. In samadhi, you transcend it. Transcending and absence are two different things. When something is absent, you are not master of the situation. When you transcend it, you are master of the situation. So in samadhi, we feel this complete non-duality, which is synonymous with restfulness, complete restfulness, because we transcend it. In deep sleep, restfulness is there because animals also have restfulness. They don't have samadhi. There is no awareness. See, without awareness, you cannot have real restfulness. That's why in samadhi only you can have real restfulness. In susupti, you have something that resembles the restfulness of samadhi. In fact, the Chandogya Upanishad, there is a long discussion on this point. So, if you do spiritual practice, you know what happens. In a way, it helps you even in dream. See, in dream, if you have some dream experiences which have a spiritual orientation, you wake up with a lot of energy, awareness, soothing effect and all that. That's why you find some in the lives of certain spiritual seekers, they got initiation, they got instruction in dream. That sometimes gave them a lot of inspiration, a lot of direction. And now this experience in dream is not possible unless you have already practiced sadhana spiritual practices in waking state. Because dream state can never be completely separate from waking state experiences. But they are not exact duplication either. Because there is a dream state is subtle, waking state is gross. In dream state, it takes only split second for you to reach New York. Waking state is 6 hours. So in dream state, you can wake up, you are in London. But waking state, you are here. So there is always, in Sanskrit called Kala Desa, and Saukshmya Sthaurya Bheda. Means difference in terms of gross and subtle, difference in terms of distance and space. But the point is, dream has got a great significance and relevance in spiritual life. And that is because in waking state, you enrich and you feed your mind with spiritual thought, spiritual ideas. So, mind is refined, spiritually charged by spiritual practices, meditation, listening, lectures, ideas. even a strong thought current in mind creates a rich pressure of vrittis and vasanas and samskaras, which you may go back again. In samskara means inner tendencies, memories, impressions. These impressions may be relived or re-experienced in dream state at a subtle level. Only mind is involved in dream state, so it is called subtle. In waking state, mind and senses are both involved, so it is called gross. So dream experiences have a great importance in spiritual life. You cannot really have spiritually elevating dreams unless you register good impressions, healthy, spiritually uplifting impressions in your mind when you are living in waking state. So waking state have wonderful thoughts in dream. But they say in dream state, if you have these experiences, they go very deep. They go very deep. That's why, you know, during the, I think, 70s or 60s, Russian psychologists tried to make use of some of these ideas in military technology. I don't know what results. So, trying to feed a human being when a person is, you heard of this? In a state of sleep. Because it's
brainwashing.
Brainwashing. Of course, we know what happened to that later, you know, the whole empire collapsed or whatever it is. So the point is, that's not the subject before us. The point is, dream is a very important, very interesting level of human consciousness. And a very powerful, much more powerful than waking state. What you dream, you may not forget. You may forget the next day, but you may remember after several years. But what we do, what we experience in waking state, we may remember next day morning, after 1 week we may not remember. But dream experience we have remembered even after several years. That's why they made use of this dream and put person to artificial sleep. But artificial sleep doesn't produce dreams. It only produces a state which is as called murcha. So Shankaracharya, his great contribution to this avasthatraya vichara is the analysis of the three states of human consciousness. Avastha means state of consciousness. So he called the state murcha. Murcha means what it means. It may be identical with a hypnotic state, where you are not in a state of natural sleep or dream or deep sleep, which is induced or produced. So in such a state, it is not possible to have strong impressions, which are possible only in natural state of dream. I shall come to you. Please.
I was just wondering, Swami, what about a recurring bad dreams, or at least they seem bad? Does the Viveka help in that? Or
yes, the question is about recurring bad dreams. Well, recurring bad dreams could be related to unfulfilled subtle desires that we entertain in waking state. They can be fought and neutralized by deliberately creating counter impressions, counter samskaras, because then slowly their influence, their effect will be reduced proportionately, and positive samskaras can be increased. So, very often, people may have dreams which cannot be really explained or analyzed in the light of their experiences or actions in waking state in this life. So, Vedantins and yoga philosophers take the range of human experience beyond this life. So whatever it may be, they can be neutralized by deliberate efforts to create positive samskara. Even if you are not able to create, it's called sankalpa, a strong will to create, a desire to create, no positive samskara itself will help you. Because really speaking, at the mental level, a strong desire to do a noble deed and doing noble deed is the same thing. At the physical level, it's different. You have a desire to pay $10,000 donation. At the gross level, you have to pay the money, otherwise that man won't get anything.
Yes, yes.
But in your mental level, even if you don't pay anything, if you have a sincere desire to help somebody, the same effect is produced. Action and also desire, sincere desire to act, will have the same effect. So far as vrittis are concerned, samskaras are concerned. And gross level, you can't do that. So, a sincere desire to produce a counter-samskara, counter-positive samskara, which will reduce the intensity of negative samskaras, will help you to get better dreams or to reduce unpleasant dreams. So, one cannot have bad dreams without having had any bad thought during waking state. So, that's an important point to remember. So far as vrittis and vasana samskaras are concerned, or impressions are concerned, there is no distinction between an action and a desire to act. A desire to do a noble deed produces the same intense samskara as the noble action itself. Because it's all at the mental level. That's the point.
For our spiritual advancement, can our self-effort includes strong desire that's so strong and constructive that one might call it self-hypnosis, or is that a misunderstanding?
It is not self-hypnosis. You know, self-hypnosis will always keep a dividing line in between. I can give you an example. If you are an executive in a company, you go for some kind of course. Suppose your performance is not very good, and a few of them will be chosen to give orientation. So you pay $1,000 per hour. You pay through your nose, and you repeat 100 times, "I shall succeed, I shall succeed." You know what happens? The money you have paid will give an intensity to what you are doing. So that intensity and the money you have paid will force you to really work hard and produce a result. Really speaking. In fact, this trick is being played by, and I don't want to mention anybody, by many organizations which go by spiritual name, unfortunately. Suppose you are asked to pay $100 to see somebody. Well, you paid $100. Next day, when a friend meets you, you have spent $100, did you get any benefit? If you say, "I did not get any benefit," they will call you a fool. You paid $100 foolishly. So even to save your self-respect, you have to say, "Oh, I paid $100, I wonderfully." So this is a kind of, this is not genuine. It's a real fact. So there is always, in self-hypnotism, self-auto-suggestion, there is always a thin layer between the real and the unreal. There is always an element of duplicity and deception. Self-deception. But in spiritual life, this layer is non-existent. It is so intense. That is why this technique is used by many people. I can give you an example. Suppose somebody attends retreat, you have to pay $10,000 per session. And if a large number of people come, and if they pay $10,000, after this, "Oh, I got my Kundalini raise," all you claim. Because if you don't say that, well, why did you waste the money? So really speaking, I'm very sorry to say this. Even in spiritual areas, such things are happening, unfortunately. That's why Sri Ramakrishna, Vivekananda, and Holy Mother, and all of them came together for this. To show you what the real stuff is.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Y In Vedantic tradition, if somebody asks you, if somebody says knowledge, spiritual knowledge, that doesn't work. Vidya means spiritual knowledge, cannot be sold or bought. So that is why this is very important. In real inspiration, is totally different from make-believe, self-suggestion, auto-suggestion, or self-hypnotism. In real conviction, real faith, if you really believe, this vivega again begins to operate. Second personality, which I mentioned earlier, the spiritual personality, which started already moving forward, is already started journeying forward, will take over, will tell you this is the real thing. So you don't have any, you won't have any doubt about this.
Between the amount of spiritual information in Vedas, Gitas, Upanishads, Sara, the Puranas, that is one aspect, and then the other one is making progress in the spiritual path. I mean, there's so many examples in India, you know, the Dasas and Karakadas, Purandaradasas, who never said many of this, and they had this spiritual evolution. Some people who are experts and still didn't make any significant spiritual progress. Can you comment on like how much is it necessary for to make deep progress in other, and one leads to more of a spiritual thoughts, having a good company?
Now, you know, you can never find a single spiritual teacher who has experienced anything, who has discarded or disowned the Vedas. They may not have studied the Vedas. Now, what about Swami Adbhudananda, one of Sri Ramakrishna's own disciples? His knowledge of scriptures was almost non-existent compared to Swami Vivekananda. Now, at the same time, when Swami Vivekananda was expounding one verse in the Kathopanishad, that Adbhudananda, yes, it is exactly like that. Where did you get the knowledge? See, experience goes beyond scriptures, but experience doesn't contradict scriptures. Experience doesn't depend upon logic and scriptures, but experience doesn't contradict scriptures and logic. You're talking of Purandaradasa. His poems are full of spiritual ideas. Where did he get them? He may not have studied Sanskrit or Vedas the way Shankaracharya must have studied or Vivekananda must have studied. But still, there are so many ways of learning. What about Tulasidas, Kabirdas, and many others? There were many, many great mystics. What about the great Russian mystic whose experiences are portrayed in the pilgrim, the way of a pilgrim? He was a peasant, barely literate. And he went to a church one day, listened to a sermon on the first epistle of St. Paul, in which the preacher had mentioned the spiritual significance of unceasing prayer. There were many listening to the same sermon. They didn't feel anything. But this man suddenly had a strong desire to understand, really practice what this unceasing prayer is. And immediately he started his journey, poor peasant, almost illiterate, almost nothing to eat. He wanted to go to Jerusalem. And eventually in his journey, he found a mendicant, a monk, a Russian Orthodox monk, who took him to a cell, his private cell, where he taught the secret of unceasing prayer. And when he learned it, he felt so much of love and compassion and joy and blissfulness within and without. His whole attitude, life, everything changed. He had not studied Aquinas or Augustine. So where did he get the knowledge? But if you ask him, he won't say the great teachings which he had not studied are wrong. So to get experience, you need not go through philosophy. Experience is something that transcends philosophy. But great teachers have to go through philosophy also. Then only they can teach. Sri Ramakrishna himself said, all his teachings are based on the Vedas. When somebody asked him, sir, there are so many preachers around, what do you think of them? Many of them were spreading contradictory ideas in 19th century, the later decades of 19th century. Sri Ramakrishna said, what the great Vedic rishis have taught will stand, the rest will come and go. That's what Sri Ramakrishna himself proclaimed. When we say Vedic rishis, we should say the great spiritual universal truths taught by the great teachers of the world, which are naturally in accordance with the teaching of the Vedas. They will stand. So, just because some musicians or mystics have realized the highest without going through philosophy, you can't say the philosophy is wrong or unnecessary. Sri Ramakrishna himself said, to teach, you need philosophy. To experience, you don't need it. So even if you have a stomach pain, you don't have to be a medical researcher to take some medicine and cure it. To take Tylenol, you don't require, you don't have to be an MD. You take it and you get cured. Like that, for experience, you don't need philosophy. But the experience doesn't contradict philosophy. The effect that Tylenol medicine produces doesn't contradict the research activity, the research results of great medical doctors. It tallies with the same thing. It's an indication of it. So, we can't say something is unnecessary or inferior. That's the point. So, I think we have reached it. So, thank you all. A wonderful session. Like I want to mention to you, we will have a Labor Day retreat in San Francisco, a new temple. We are going to the hall. From 3rd to 5th of September, Saturday and Sunday, two sessions, and Monday, one session. The topic for discussion for this year, Labor Day Retreat, is conflicts in life and spiritual solution, something like this. Sorry, because we have. Swamiji, please read out. Can you read out? Vedantaji? Vedantaji will read out.
You told me what.
But I don't remember.
Remembering the program in spiritual life.
Yes.
No, I don't.
Okay. Anyway, the subject is this problems of life, the spiritual solution. So, Labor Day retreat from 3rd to 5th September. Thank you, most of all of you.
Thank you.
Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa.